Thank you very much, Jillian, and thanks, Dave, for pulling some of this together. I'm looking forward to the whole session and seeing the other talks. I think it's as Jillian just outlined it, it's an extremely fascinating but at the same time very complex subject. And what I wanted to show here, I put the Ocean's Human Health Initiative down at the bottom left and the Peterstown Partnership on the upper right, two jobs that I've taken on. I was a science advisor to NOAA's Ocean's Human Health Initiative in addition to the partnership work. So while I'm retired from NOAA, I'm still staying active in this field because, again, I find the issue of seafood safety and human health to be one that needs a lot of attention. My disclosure, I have nothing to disclose. This graph, I think, epitomizes a lot of what people think about when they think about seafood safety and health. If you look at this, is countries plotted individually, plotting their per capita annual fish consumption and the longevity. Now, we all know there's a lot of things that go into this sort of data, but nonetheless, this is a really compelling view of what happens in countries where people eat a lot more fish. In general, longevity increases. But it's you know, obviously this is just correlational, it's not causal. The Institute of Medicine in the US put out a volume several years ago looking at seafood choices. What do we know about seafood and human health? And as Jillian said, it's pretty clear that eating seafood confers a lot of human health benefits, most notably cardiovascular benefits in adults and neurological development in the developing fetus. In addition, there's many other things. You reduce cancer, diabetes, arthritis, etc., that have shown in a number of studies, both clinical and laboratory studies, etc., that there are presumed conferred benefits to human health from eating fish. At the same time, there's risks. Largely, the risks with eating seafood, they can come from a variety of sources, but what people tend to focus on are chemical contaminants, and that's sort of my area of expertise, is toxicology and what do you do about these chemical contaminants. I'm going to touch on it really briefly in this presentation, but I won't go into it in any great detail. And the risks that these chemical contaminants pose are many of the same things that are the benefits that seafood contains. So it's, as Jillian said, things can point in different directions. This is some clinical data from Japan showing that cardiovascular disease in the top is, and heart attacks drop with increased seafood in kilograms per year. And down at the bottom, the omega-3 fatty acids, which are generally believed to be the health-conferring components, or a major portion of the health-conferring components of seafood, also you see the same relationship. But we also know that if you eat just the fish oils by themselves, if you eat just the omega-3 fatty acids, a number of studies are coming out now and showing we don't seem to see the same degree of benefit as we do with eating the whole fish itself. So it's not, again, it's the take-home message is not that simple of an issue. But seafood is natural food. It's, you know, the ultimate. If you go from manufactured food to natural food, it's the ultimate. But the other thing about seafood is it's the only significant part of our food supply that comes from the wild, for the wild capture fish. And that's where we run into this problem, because you see that it's coming from this area that we don't control. And so when we know we're putting pollutants out into the environment, we know that fish move around. We don't really know very well what's the intersection between those contaminants and the fish. And that leads to issues in people's minds. And in the seafood world, there's a lot of things that cause problems. We're looking at hundreds of species. So we're not looking at just pork, cattle, etc. We're looking at hundreds of species with very different life histories, very different, they eat at very different trophic levels, and they're in cold water to warm water, they're in deep water to near shore shallow water, they're in fresh water and salt water. So it's an extremely diverse array of species that makes up what we call seafood. They're caught in the wild caught fish come from thousands of vessels, so it's very hard to regulate this sort of effort. There's recreational harvest as well, which is very difficult to get good handles on the quality of that seafood. It's seasonal in general, at least in the United States. And in terms of fish processing facilities, there's a lot of small, old family-operated processors. So all in all, the seafood industry, primarily in the United States, is very difficult to understand and very difficult to regulate. Very different than commercial agriculture and production of other types of meat. So that leads to this range of hazards. So you can have things like naturally occurring toxins, the chemicals that I'll talk about a little more, parasites, drug residues if you're treating animals in aquaculture facilities. People generally are concerned about a wide range of things potentially being in seafood. So chemical contaminants are most concern for seafood safety. I've shown the three top ones here. The top right, methylmercury. Methylmercury is formed when elemental mercury is released through natural processes, but increasingly people are finally believing that mercury is increasing as a result of coal emissions and other types of activities. And this elemental mercury is then converted biologically to methylmercury, which is very bioaccumulates to a high degree, builds up as you go up trophic levels, and has a range of toxicities, including primarily it's neurologic, it's a neurotoxin. PCBs, polychlorinated biphenyls, in the top left, these are industrial chemicals that are in theory banned from being manufactured and used since the 70s, but in fact we do allow the use of some, or the presence of some low levels of some PCBs even today in some commercial products. They're not put in there intentionally, but they're formed as a result of industrial processes, and we allow them to be there. And the PAH is polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, formed either coming from fossil fuels as a result or as a result of combustion products. These largely come, in terms of seafood issues, they largely come as a result, their main concern is from oil spills and the release of PAHs, which are a significant component of oil, into nearshore waters and then contamination of seafood. So these three are the number one, two, and three causes of fish consumption advisories in the United States. Again, the PAHs come from oil spills. There's a whole separate lecture that I give at times on the issues of seafood safety and oil spills, but I'm not going to delve into that here. But these are the three that you'll see most commonly cited when people make fish consumption advisories, telling people to limit their consumption of fish. But in addition to that, we've got thousands of other chemicals. You can call them chemicals of emerging concern. That's sort of the term that the toxicology world uses. But in fact, they've been of concern for quite some time. So the emerging concern is, as we get more and more information about their presence, about new chemicals coming into the system. And again, because seafood comes from the wild, and we have thousands of chemicals, in many cases we don't even know what these chemicals are because of proprietary laws in the United States, it's really difficult to tell people that some of these chemicals are not in their seafood. It's equally difficult to tell them it's not in their meat and their poultry and their pork. But it's a little different, and it's actually a lot different in public perception because it's this issue that things are coming from the wild. So in the U.S., this is an older slide. It says 80% of our seafood is imported. It's closer now to 90% of our seafood is imported. 20,000 foreign firms are shipping to the United States, and in general, again, the seafood is being produced in other nations and coming to the U.S. It's very hard to monitor. The FDA does put inspectors overseas to look at processing plants, and we have some inspections, but an extremely small portion of our imported seafood is actually inspected and checked for quality. Congress keeps going back and forth when there's some problem in the seafood supply. They'll say we're going to put more money in, but then it disappears pretty quickly. In general, we don't have a good handle on what's coming into our imported from other countries. This shows some of the levels of imports into the United States. All these countries here, except for Mexico, well, there's a few, but they're generally developing economies. Canada is number three, and Chile is number four. That's primarily farmed Atlantic salmon that's coming into the U.S. Everything else is a lot of cultured fish. China is number one, Thailand. A lot of Asian countries import seafood. An awful lot of that is shrimp. An awful lot of that is also farmed catfish. But a lot of this then is farmed seafood coming into the U.S. from other countries, especially Asia. So the issue of contaminants in seafood is one that comes back again and again and again. And Darius Mazafarian has worked on this a lot, has tried to convince people of the relative risks versus the relative benefits of consuming seafood. This is one of the studies that he and a co-worker did. They looked at farm versus wild, salmon. So cultured salmon versus wild salmon. Several, about a decade and a half, probably 15 years ago now, there was a lot of hubris, I would call it, in the scientific literature about the levels of contaminants in farm salmon and how high they were and how PCBs were higher in farm salmon because they were using fish oil from industrial fish that had high PCBs, and it was bioaccumulating in the salmon. Even with that being said, if they looked at the relative risk of PCB consumption versus in farm fish versus wild fish, they still concluded that the benefits would outweigh the risks in terms of human health benefits by 300-1. So even if you had PCB contaminated fish, farmed salmon, you still had greatly higher health benefits than you did have risks from eating the PCBs. Since then, the PCB levels have dropped markedly in farm products. People, again, because it's a farm product, people can control what is actually in the feed. They can test the oils before they feed it to the farm fish, and they can actually, you can now say in many cases, farm fish can be and oftentimes are cleaner, lower levels of organic chlorine contaminants like PCBs compared to wild fish. Especially for me, coming from the Seattle area, Puget Sound is an area where we have an ongoing PCB issue in Puget Sound. So farm fish actually are demonstrably cleaner than they were 15 or 20 years ago, but people tend to not remember that. But again, the take-home message here is the benefits from eating fish outweigh the real and the real risk, as far as we understand them, of consuming the contaminants. And the perceived risk, though, is something that you're going to hear more about, I think, in this session. And with that, if we make a fish consumption advisory, if we tell people don't eat so many, don't eat fish because of PCBs, fish from this one site, or oysters from this site that has PAH contamination, they don't appear to help in terms of what people do. If you put out all the advisories, you still will build up certain levels of contaminants, or you'll get certain levels of exposure. People don't pay attention to it. Generally, fish consumption advisories are not thought to be a good way of moderating fish consumption. And several years ago, we put out a paper in fisheries. We tried to reach out to the fisheries community, a bunch of chemists and toxicologists, and tell them about this issue of seafood and the seafood dilemma, and how do you balance the risks and the benefits, and what do we need in order to have more assurance for the public in terms of healthy constituents of seafood. My personal view is that hasn't made a lot of difference. I think that the confusion continues today, and that's one of the reasons for this session. And I think it's great to see this at APHA. I think that that's the intersection we need, is to get the toxicologists and the fisheries people and the public health professionals together to continue to discuss this. So what do we know about global seafood production in terms of, let's talk about the other thing, about the sustainability, which is in my title. So this shows the world, the wild catch of fish on the left, going back to the 50s. And you can see that starting in about around the 90s to the turn of the century, we've basically leveled off in the catch of wild fish. It's not going up. We are basically doing, we now have the technology to way over harvest the fisheries, and we're trying to manage them. We are aware of how to better manage fisheries, but whether or not we actually do it because of political reasons still remains very much up in the air. But basically, I think it's safe to say the world wild capture fisheries is leveling off. So if we want to increase human health by increased consumption of seafood, we're going to have to look to aquaculture products. And that's shown on the right. You can see that there's an increase that's going steadily up, up, and up in terms of the production of cultured seafood products around the world. And this shows the two put together, and this makes it more clear that the wild catch is leveling off while aquaculture is going up. So, if again, people are proposing that we need to have certain levels of seafood that we consume. We don't get enough fish in the wild to produce that level of consumption to confer the presumed health benefits, so we're going to have to think about aquaculture. And there's a lot of literature on this, on how the oceans are going to help feed humanity. How are we going to sustainably farm marine fish, et cetera? Just an example, there is a lot of interest in the scientific literature. Can we actually derive a significant component of the human diet from the ocean, and can we increase it? And that's really a question that a lot of people have. The World Bank thinks this is an important issue. As you know, the World Bank tends to focus on those things that will enhance social stability, and it basically makes it safe for investment banking. And so things that enhance social and civil stability, they're in favor of. And they strongly feel that fisheries are an area where we should be putting in more effort. If you think about global meat production overall, this is several years old, but it hasn't changed a lot. The consumption of meat, fish are equivalent to pork and poultry and beef as far as their production of meat for human consumption. Again, about half and half is wild versus aquaculture. So fish is a major commodity in terms of meat production. But, so here's the rub. So we've got fish, and we want to eat more fish, and we want to figure out how we're going to feed them. If we think about, this is from a talk I've given on overall global food production and what proportion fish makes of that, and part of this is what happens in terms of where are we in our ability to produce more food just based on the land, based on terrestrial food production. Well, right now we're pretty much maxed out as far as the availability of fresh water to produce food to feed the human population on a global scale. If we took all of the fresh water that we have available on the globe, we could feed 10 to 15 billion people. This is with no waste and no other uses. So we're gonna come up on 9 billion people. We basically don't have an excess of fresh water to increase food production globally. And this is even more true. I think you're seeing more and more the geopolitical tension over fresh water in many situations. And again, as Jillian said, I'm working in California's Delta, and there we've got fresh water wars that are just incredible. Fresh water is not going to help us get out of our ability to produce terrestrial food. We only currently have 38% of the land surface on the earth is used in farming, is arable land, is under cultivation. But in this graph, you can see that's leveled off. We basically don't have any, the land that is not under cultivation is under ice or under water or under other things, but basically we don't have additional arable land that we can put into terrestrial food production. So really, if we are talking about how we're going to feed more people, in addition to how we're going to feed more people fish, we're going to have to really start thinking about the oceans. So we all know from our grade school days that the ocean covers the vast majority of the Earth's surface, and we're tapped out on what we can do as far as producing food from land. So the question is, can we substantially increase the global food supply by increasing our harvest from the oceans without relying on terrestrial production? Well, one of the issues in the aquaculture world is that we're capturing wild fish, forage fish like menhaden, anchovies, etc., to grind them up to make fish meal and fish oil to feed to fish like salmon in pens. People are more and more saying, well, let's feed them soy, let's feed them corn. So people are turning to do that, but that really is not probably going to be the solution, and I'll get back to that in just a second. If we look at the global capture fisheries, the vast majority of what we capture in seafood, seafood is a mushy term. It doesn't necessarily mean marine, it can mean freshwater and saltwater. But total, you could call it aquatic food, I guess, so fish and other things that live in the water. 3/4 of what is wild captured seafood comes from in the form of marine fish. About 1/15 comes in the form of marine mollusks, so this is largely clams and oysters, and then crustaceans, shrimp and crabs, freshwater fish, and then obviously very little in terms of freshwater mollusks or freshwater crustaceans. In the aquaculture world, it's very different. Here, 50% is coming from freshwater, a little over a quarter is coming from marine fish and shellfish, and then 23% is coming from marine plants. But remember, if we're talking about trying to increase this number, we're talking about really trying to increase cultured products. We can't really look to the freshwater end of things because we don't have enough freshwater to take freshwater away from other uses to put into freshwater production of fish. Instead, we've got to focus on the marine side. And we've got to figure out how to use all that expanse of available marine water to increase our production of fish fish and seafood for human consumption. We can break it down further into the marine fish the marine fish and crustacea and other things, it's about a little over half of that goes to marine mollusks. And so this is to filter feeding clams and oysters and things like that. And so those are really important for feeding people. And these things, the mollusks, the filter feeders and the plants, they largely don't need feed and they don't need fresh water. So if we're going to be able to feed more people, we're going to have to figure out how to use these species primarily and not so much the fish species. And people have come out and said, we should not be taking terrestrial food to feed fish. And the only way we're going to do that is by to increase seafood is to use things that don't need feed and don't need fresh water. And that's going to be the filter feeders and that's going to be the algae. And in this graph that projected, the FAO projected up to 2020, and then in this Duarte paper, they projected by 2040, we will be out of any additional fish meal and fish oil that we can use to produce fish. And we're going to have to rely on herbivores and filter feeders. So this is happening now in Asia big time. IMTA is integrated multi-trophic aquaculture. They're taking, doing both abalone, kelp, and sea cucumber, growing them all together, but not relying on feeds, relying on natural waters, and not relying on inputs. Just on the East Coast, a guy has come up with a fisherman there who decided he did not want to keep going out and fishing actively. He wanted to instead work on restoring coastal waters. Has put in a system that relies on scallops, clams, oysters, and kelp. They call it Green Wave. And it's turned out to be so far productive, and they just received just 10 days ago an award from the Buckminster Fuller Institute to make this a reality, to go from concept to go into production. So this is really, I think, to me, this is the future of increased seafood production if we're talking about sustainability. Coming back to the last slide to the title, and trying to wrap it up, if we want to talk about sustainable seafood production that improves human health, to me, it really lies in growing marine plants and invertebrates, perhaps herbivorous fishes, but as you're going to hear more about human health benefits in this session, and you'll hear it in others as well. The problem is, right now, almost all of our studies on human health benefits focus on marine fish and marine fish consumption. We don't know about the human health benefits of eating oysters and clams, and especially algae and seaweed. But if we want to have sustainable seafood production, that's where we have to go. Thank you very much.